My dad had outrageous expectations of my brother and me. He expected way more of us than my friend's parents did of them, which was totally unfair. Here's just a sampling of what my father and my mother expected out of me. I was to do all of my schoolwork to the best of my ability. I was to do chores, sometimes without even being asked. I was to be nice to other kids, even when they weren't nice to me and even my older brother. I was to be pleasant and respectful at all times, look people in the eye when I spoke to them, and the answer was never merely yeah, but was yes, Dad, yes, please, or no, thank you. He did stop short of requiring sir or ma'am. Frankly, I don't know how my brother and I even survived. Protesting was futile. We knew the response that we would get. You're in England. That makes you a little different from everybody else. Translation? I don't care what those other kids' parents want from them. You are mine. I claim you, and I expect better out of you. Christ demanded the outrageous of his followers, too. Listen to this from the sixth chapter of Luke, beginning with verse 27, which is on page 64 of your New Testament Pew Bible. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap, for the measure you give will be the measure that you get back. So what Christ is doing here is demanding radical generosity, radical stewardship, on a level that really few of us can imagine sustaining in any realistic way. Because these things he's telling his followers to do, they're all actions. Do good, bless, pray for, give, lend. Even love in this context is a verb. It's an action word. It's not a warm, fuzzy feeling. In fact, it is an action made up of the combination of the rest of these actions. Bless them, pray for them, give to them, refrain from judging, refrain from condemning, forgive. Notice he doesn't ask those who follow him how they feel about these demands. And he does not direct his followers to pass these demands on to other people. He requires that they do it, that they live out these demands. In other words, it's the action that matters first. Acting right and the being right will follow. Ben Franklin's version of this was, "A good example is the best sermon." You know, I tried my best to live up to my dad's expectations, impossible as they were, especially once I hit high school. The military community on tiny Okinawa, Japan, where we lived, was a lot like living in a small town. Everyone knew everyone, and reputation mattered. A damaged reputation could easily become a damaged military career, and it could be the result of a kid's transgression. I saw this play out more than once among my schoolmates. A kid would get into trouble with the law, either American or Japanese, and if it was bad enough, that kid's dad could lose his post. Sometimes a whole family could be sent back to the States. But to me, the worst part of that was the shame that it could bring down on that kid's dad. How could he lead Marines, people would say, if he couldn't even manage his own child's behavior? Often these were colonel's kids, general's kids, chaplain's kids. We reflected upon our folks and we knew it. Our behavior affected how people saw our parents, for better or for worse. And as backward and overly strict as they were, I loved my mom and dad. I wanted to reflect well upon them. They'd claimed me. I wanted to claim them back. So back to this stuff Jesus is saying. This passage, it galls people. I'm supposed to give to everyone. Don't ask for your stuff back. Even if someone takes your coat, I'm supposed to give my shirt too? To what extent? Till we're standing there naked with nothing? Yes. Till the taker's taking exposes his greed. Till the oppression of the oppressor is plain to all. And until the radical generosity is made plain in the actions of the giver. This is radical stewardship. Christ's demands may seem exaggerated, but when we actually embrace them, that turns the world on its head. As we've seen this before in the world, this nonviolent resistance, Gandhi, King, Mandela, each of them faced overwhelming odds of systemic injustice, retribution, arrogance, cruelty, and each of them refused to respond with the same. Each of them chose justice, mercy, humility. Injustice abounds. Retribution abounds. Arrogance abounds. Christ calls us to higher ways. Justice, mercy, humility. To what end? To change the world? Is that the task we take on when we do this? Something that huge, that mind-boggling, that unimaginable? You know, believe it or not, my dad wasn't done with his unreasonable demands. On top of everything else, he demanded I stop minding my brother's business. That was a tough pill to swallow. Like most children, I believed that equal meant the same. Like most teenagers, I wanted things to be black and white. If I had to do chores, Mike better have to do chores. If I'm in trouble, Mike better be in just as much trouble as me. So if I perceived a difference, an injustice in the treatment between my brother and myself and protested, the answer would be you worry about yourself. His privileges, his rules, his consequences are none of your concern. You worry about you. Christ says the same. He calls us to manage ourselves, not each other. You love your enemies. You be merciful. You forgive. You do justice, love mercy, walk humbly. You act with love, is what Christ is saying here. You guys, this isn't about changing the world. This is about changing ourselves. I mean, where else can change for this world begin otherwise? I think the idea that Christ and Ben Franklin and my father was working off of is that this kind of thing spreads. What we model spreads. I mean, take smiling. Smiling spreads. Smiling is contagious. Science proves it. Traveling in a foreign country proves it. We can prove it right now. Try it. Smile at somebody. You see? What we model spreads. Not what we preach, what we do. Gandhi, King, Mandela, they changed things by choosing to love their enemies by refusing to become them, by modeling a better way. And man, did that spread. And yes, they spoke out against the injustices facing them, but I don't think it was their speeches that changed the hearts of their oppressors any more than I think words change the hearts of oppressors today. I think it's the actions they took, the qualities they brought, the hearts with which they showed up. A good example is the best sermon. Actions speak louder than words. The writer Anne Lamott talks about this kind of thing all the time. In her piece, Show Up With Hope, she reminds us of what Mr. Rogers said his mother used to tell him when he was a boy and saw scary things on TV, on the news. She would say, look for the helpers. There are always people helping. She didn't say, look for the preachers. She said, look for the helpers, the doers. You know what it takes to be a helper? Showing up and helping. You know what it takes to be a giver? Showing up and giving. The doing leads to the being. Anne Lamott is big on doing what she can in the small ways she can right there and in her own community. You tell her what she's doing is too small to make a difference in the grand scheme of things, and she says, "I would thank you for sharing and get back to doing what is possible. Those who say it can't be done should get out of the way of those who are doing it." She says, we take the action, soup kitchens, creek restoration, mentoring, and then the insight follows that by showing up with hope to help others, I'm guaranteeing that hope is present. Then my own hope increases. By creating hope for others, I wind up awash in the stuff. It's not just hope, though. Show up with love, and you make love be present. Show up with mercy in your heart, and suddenly mercy is present. You know, she's got two things going on here, and I hear Luke 6 in both of them. Sometimes you've got to show up first and bring it. The action comes first. And then that thing you bring, that action you take that is possible, takes root and spreads. It's the same thing that Christ is saying. Do these things that show active love for those who oppose you, because that radical stewardship, that radical generosity, that radical showing up is catching. And yes, it's an outrageous demand. It has to be. Because how outrageous is it that God has said to us, "You are mine, I claim you"? And how outrageous is it to claim Christ in return, to persist in hope, to persist in showing up, in helping and giving and loving and blessing? What else could it be to be claimed by Christ and to claim him in return than to know that more is expected of us, that we are called to do better than the rest of the world thinks is possible? Maybe the rest of the world doesn't do this stuff because they don't believe it can be done. Maybe they're just waiting to see someone pull it off first. That's you, and that's me. That's us. You know, my parents didn't stay that unreasonable. They learned a lot as I got older. And I tried to be patient with them while they figured out this parenting thing. And in a happy coincidence, I found that the things my dad required of me got easier the more I put them into practice. Helping around the house started to make more sense. Doing my schoolwork well actually seemed to benefit me somehow. I was proud to display the manners I'd been taught when I spoke to adults. These qualities my dad called being an Englishman began to become part of who I was. And I knew who I was because I knew whose I was. What was he trying to do this whole time I was growing up? I think he was trying to instill in me qualities that would serve me well no matter what arose, and qualities that would serve others well no matter what arose. There was no way he could have equipped me with every possible tool or fact or skill that could be called for in every possible situation. He knew that wherever I went in my life, sometimes all I was going to be able to show up with was myself. And sometimes that was going to have to be enough. The stewardship campaign we're in, we've been asking, what shall we bring? Well, what can we bring sometimes but our own gracious selves, our own God-given, God-fueled selves? Have we not been stocked and formed and filled with everything we need to do justice, love mercy, walk humbly in the world? Have we not learned to do our work faithfully, be kind to one another, speak respectfully? And have we not learned that all we have charge of is our own words, thoughts, and deeds? Yes, there are times we can bring any number of gifts. We can bring our time, our talents, our treasure, but sometimes we come just bearing ourselves. And Lamott says that sometimes hope is a radical act. I think that sometimes showing up is a radical act too. It takes a kind of brazen courage to show up and bring what you have to give, just yourself, and lay it on the table next to the hammer and the nails and the rolling pin and the laundry basket. You have to see this self of yours as useful, as valuable, as worthy of the cause. And this is the point where most of us fall down, isn't it? That moment of vulnerability. The doubt and the shame that says, these moments when all I have to bring is myself, how can that be enough? Well, I've been working on this enoughness. I'm not perfect at it yet. but both my earthly father and my heavenly father tried to stock me with justice, mercy, and humility. And I'm still working on perfecting a couple of those too, namely justice, mercy, and humility. But this enoughness, it's starting to come. So if you ask me, what do I bring? Well, let's see. When I bring myself, I bring my humor. I bring my tall. I bring my precise language and some annoying perfectionism. I bring my smarts. I bring whatever my hair is doing that day. I bring imposing. I bring my loud. I bring my attention. I bring my I see you. And I bring, like you, I bring love and longing and the desire for connection. I bring the ever greater daring and the vulnerability and all of the awkward. I bring, in short, my God-given self. If I can just show up with it, I can do what can be done with it to the best of my ability, knowing that the things I bring come from my Father because of who I am, and knowing also that the things I do and the things I say reflect upon my Father because of whose I am. So what do you bring? Whatever you bring, if nothing else, bring your God-given self, because we need it. We got work to do. Amen.